News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 3rd of June, Anno Domini 2007, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Pat Kirchgesner.
And it is and you're listening to Soundbites. It's 8 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use. Yes, we have two new people in. We have Steve. Dave Enright is out one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest, and
that's probably more true than it usually is when you say that.
And Rob is hiding under his bed crying like a 3-year-old. I don't know where either one of them are, actually. So don't take my word for anything today. I have no idea. All right. Let's start with the news. And it used to be that music fans believed cryptic messages about Satan or the death of a band member were hidden within rock albums. Nowadays, the secrets buried in digital music are way too easy to find, according to the Electronic Frontier Foundation. The consumer watchdog group, which focuses on the web, claims Apple has left information belonging to customers of the new iTunes Plus service exposed. Music purchased from iTunes Plus is embedded with unencrypted customer names and email addresses. Apple has for a long time included a customer's name and email address within song files purchased from iTunes, according to an EFF attorney, but the personal information was encrypted. On Wednesday, the company launched iTunes Plus, a service that features music without the controversial copy protection software. In these songs, names and email addresses were unencrypted. The lawyer pointed out that data could be easily compromised if an iPod is lost or stolen. It's not as bad as losing a credit card number, he said, but it's still information that people wouldn't want floating around out there, especially without them knowing about it. On Saturday, an Apple spokesman disputed the EFF's claim that the company had ever encrypted personal information embedded into iTunes music. The spokesman said in an email that even with DRM tracks, digital restriction management tracks, personal information is written in clear text. I don't know that makes it any better. Actually,
well, see, now I look at it at the other side, and people don't want their personal information flying around. Don't copy those songs to anyone else.
Yes, and that really becomes the bottom line, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it doesn't matter if it's in there. If you're talking about if you lose your
you lose your iPod or something, it could show up there. Yeah,
right. That's what they're talking about.
And that's one of the distinctions that we need to keep making clear is that the new iTunes Plus, there's no digital rights management on the song, but it's still copyrighted and you cannot make a copy of it and give it to someone else.
Right. And as I keep saying, everybody needs to buy those unprotected songs just to reward EMI for putting them out there. I think that's a great idea. I think it is the future of music. But the only way they'll continue to do it is if you actually go out and continue to buy that music.
Yep. And they actually have a program going now where for the music you've already purchased, you can upgrade to the higher quality. In addition to no DRM, it's twice the bit rate, so 256K. So it sounds much better, and for a limited time, you can upgrade all of your old music to the new format for the 30-cent price difference each.
Right, right. And, of course, you also you can then put fewer songs on because the files are bigger.
Slightly bigger, yeah.
Right, so that's a trade-off, but I'd rather have better music quality for most of the stuff. Sure. You know, for a show like Soundbites, it's all just voices, so it doesn't matter. But for, good music, you want a higher bit rate. All right, we're going to go to the phones. Our first caller is Ed. Ed, where are you calling from?
Oh, Rochester.
Rochester, New York, hub of civilization in the Western world.
Hey, we're still alive. I guess that's all that matters.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
What can we do for you, Ed?
I am just an average user of a computer. You guys are the experts. I don't even know what you're talking about half the time, but this is why I'm calling. To being just the average user and getting my emails, I've noticed my emails have shrunken lately. I am not getting the spam college fund, the spam you want to get a loan, this and that. Now, I've heard last week somebody was arrested in the country, and this gentleman was the one responsible for people getting an extra 5 to 10 emails a day? Is any of that true?
Yeah, it is
true.
All
of it is true.
His name was Robert Allen Soloway, and he was arrested the other day. He was one of the top 10 spammers in the world. And
27-year-old guy.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, they should put this guy in charge of something very important because he obviously has a great future and a great mind.
If only they'd use their power for good.
Oh,
but it's just been so amazing. I click on my emails. In fact, this morning, normally I would have 10 to 15. Now I got 3. And yeah. I've noticed the emails that I'm getting are only from people that I have emailed or companies before.
Right.
With their products. I don't get the spam anymore.
And right.
Yep. Somebody told me that was because of that guy. So
some of it certainly is. He's out of business. His companies are out of business. He was offering companies a $20 million email advertising campaign.
Wow.
For only $495.
Why isn't someone stepping up to the plate now and taking his place?
They probably
someone will.
Will.
Yes.
Well, oh, somebody will.
There's cycles you'll see in spam. It'll be real bad for a while, and then it will clear up a little bit as the anti-spam companies and email servers that are clearing spam catch on to whatever the latest type of spam is, and then the spammers will figure out a way to get around that. You know, it used to be you could just scan for common words, and then they put ones instead of L, so you can't do that way. And then random text at the end of the message, or random text in the subject line. So the spammers try to get smart to overcome the anti-spammers, and then it's a cat and mouse,
right?
And cycles up and down.
This guy was arrested for mail fraud, wire fraud, email fraud, identity theft, and money laundering.
Oh, so that means he'll only be in for 2 weeks.
Yeah, unless he's got a good lawyer, and then it's a week and a half.
Yeah. Well, guys, thank you. I know where to call to get the answers.
Thank you very much, Ed.
Thank you.
Sure. This is you're right, this is getting more and more common, and it's getting worse and worse. People are getting, I've got a dozen email addresses, and they're always full of spam. I'm running my own mail server at the Saunders College of Business, and so consequently, I have all kinds of anti-spam scrubbers in place.
Sure.
Even so, I get a bunch of spam because you're right, Steve. They can't keep up quite.
And those little tricks with using an apostrophe instead of something some other right. character does trick those anti-spam programs.
Yes, it's kind of interesting that the human eye can figure out what it meant instantly, but the computer has to look for an exact pattern match.
Right. Computers are not that bright, frankly.
Yeah.
They're real good at dumb, repetitive things, but they're not that good at other stuff. But
that's one of the things I've said over the years. It's kind of funny that computers can do theoretical physics and plot orbital trajectories really easy, but they have a hard time understanding speech.
Yeah, well, that's exactly
something
right.
Something we take for granted.
that is a real problem. But I tell you, this guy was. Huge. He was sending out billions and billions and billions of emails every day. So it's certainly very possible that Ed's problems were in large part caused by this guy, because he was a significant percentage of the email that was going. 27-year-old guy making a bucket load of money. This actually came from some place called the Spam House Project. SPAMHAUS. It's an international anti-spam company that fights against internet violations. It has about 135 spammers on its list, and this Robert Allen Soloway was in the top 10. He was sending about, Ed, you're absolutely right, here it is. He was sending about 80% of all spam email. One guy, 80% of the billions of pieces of spam sent out every hour.
It's just amazing to think of.
That's just astonishing to me. His company was called Newport Internet Marketing Corporation. And so that's how they traced him. The guy's living in Seattle, Washington. Now there's a shock and a half, huh? But that's the deal. And he's, I don't know, I don't even know if he's ever going to get out. We'll continue to follow this story. But I don't know what else. It hasn't gone very far yet. I mean, he just got arrested the other day, so we'll find out what the story is with that. It's basically he was using zombie computers. These are computers that he takes over in some way using a virus or whatever. And by doing that, he now owns that machine
and just sends out tons of spam from that machine.
But he's got millions. He's got millions of these things out there, so they each send out a couple of hundred or whatever, and that's how we get those. All right, I can hear by the music that it's time for us to take a break.
Or it's just you're the lunatic fringe.
Right. Or it's just that the voices in my head are all humming along together. We're going to take a quick break, back in a couple of minutes with Dan Deary, Steve Ray. I don't remember your name.
Pat Kirchgesser.
Pat. And Nina Francesco and all of you at 18 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Pat K.
Thank you, Pat. Makes it much easier for me. It's 22 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites.
And we've gone from from the lunatic fringe to hot-blooded.
There you go. For those of you who are using Skype, that was easy. Let me start over. Hi, I'm Nick Fran. For those of you who are using programs like Skype, Voice over IP, bad news. A federal appeals court on Friday largely upheld a requirement that internet phone companies like Vonage pay taxes into a fund to subsidize rural telephone service. But Voice over Internet Protocol representatives say the ruling isn't all bad. In what amounts to a split decision, a three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia said the Federal Communications Commission acted reasonably and within its authority last June when it extended to voice over IP providers, VoIP providers, a new set of taxes. Wireline and wireless carriers already are required to pay 10.9% of their long-distance revenues into the so-called Universal Service Fund. The judge has kept in place a key portion of the FCC rules, challenged by Vonage and industry group VON Coalition, that appears to discriminate against VoIP providers in favor of their more politically influential competitors. The rule would require the upstarts to pay a higher percentage of their revenues than wireless and wireline rivals. Vonage and the VON Coalition never challenged the FCC's authority to require their companies to pay into the fund. Instead, they took issue with the methodology for calculating how much they owed. An attorney for Vonage had argued in court that internet phone companies are analogous to wireless carriers in the percentage of long-distance calls they carry and should have the option of paying the same safe harbor percentage of their revenue. Left unchanged, the FCC's new rules would have led to $2.12 extra on the average VoIP customer's $30 monthly bill, as opposed to $1.38 for wireless customers and $1.21 for wireless subscribers. That translates to roughly $20.7 million per month. Or $249 million per year collected from VoIP customers based on the 9.8 million interconnected VoIP users. So if you are...
That seems unfair.
Seems unfair to make them pay the same taxes everybody else pays?
Well, no, it was all different amounts for different connections.
Well, it's based on the percentage of long distance you carry.
Oh.
And what they're saying is that the whole reason behind VoIP is to do more long distance.
Well, to avoid long distance charges.
Right, yeah. Right. So they're charging them that extra bit. And I suppose that's at least partially true. I mean, looking at the people I know who do VoIP, the vast majority of them are calling overseas for one reason or another. So, or at least maybe to Canada, but to another country anyway. So I understand that. That does make a certain amount of sense to me. All right, we're going back to the phones, and our next caller is Mike. Mike, where are you calling from?
Buffalo,
New York.
Yes. Beautiful downtown Buffalo. The daughter bought a laptop. She's going to Africa.
Yeah.
Okay. And she's used to running Windows XP, and this one came with Vista.
Yep.
And I'm wondering whether I would do better to install XP on it. And actually, I mean, it's a pretty powerful laptop. I mean, it's got a gig of memory, and it's, you know, got, 512 L2 cache. And I just wondered what your opinions of. The only thing I'm worried about is that it's a 64-bit processor.
Well, it'll run 32-bit stuff fine.
Okay.
So that's not a problem, but...
As long as the computer is oomphy enough. See, we're going to be in this transitional period for a while with Windows. People don't like Vista because it's different. is one of the problems, and they're trying to install it on too low end a computer is the other major problem.
Well, that's what her complaint is. To her, it seems slow.
It is slow. 1 gig of RAM is not terribly fast.
Yeah,
for Vista,
one gig is minimum. 2 gigs is recommended. The other big problem is the video memory. In fact, I just set up a Lenovo the other day, and it was using shared video, but it had 1 gig of RAM, and it was still slow.
Right.
With it, you really need a dedicated video chip and video memory for Vista to run well. I got a 3 out of 6 on the Vista experience scale.
Oh, nice. I'm 3.2 on the one I have at work.
Yeah, on a brand new Lenovo. So.
Yeah, right.
Okay. And the other question I have about going to Africa, is there a company that makes solar panels for charging laptops?
Yes.
Yes?
There are several, actually.
We may already have them in our link list.
I think we do. Take a look.
Okay, super.
If not, we'll add a couple. The other thing, we just had a customer yesterday asking about Indonesia and getting on the internet. We hear the same thing across Africa, that internet service is spotty at best. Cellular internet is possible, but cellular service also is spotty. So the really only confirmed way is satellite internet. Which is a little expensive.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
But we'll look up some things. There's a backpack. There's a big flat thing you lay out. There's all kinds of stuff. There's one that sits on the dashboard. We'll put a couple of links up in our link list.
July of 2005, we talked about it.
There you go. They're already in there.
Okay.
You can get to our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And click on the links tab, and then the third choice there is the list of sites mentioned weekly on the show, and just go down the list and you'll find them.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Bye. We're going to take another break. We have the mighty Glenn Lamberts, who will be coming in to give you all the news and all the weather and all the sports and all the things that you really listen to Wham for. His mellifluous tones will be wafting into your ears in just a couple of moments. In the meantime, we'll be sitting here just awed by the... roll up your pant legs because it's getting deep in there. We'll be right back in just a couple of minutes. We have Dan Deary. We have Steve Ray. We have Pat Kay. God bless him. I'm Nick Francesco. It is 28 minutes after the hour. And we'll be back on the other side of Glenn with a whole bunch of other stuff on the greatest computer show in the known universe. And that's Soundbites, and you can only hear it right here at 1180 WHAM. Correct. Back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Pat Kay.
And 33 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. So, Glenn, you're saying that the higher score wins in baseball?
You know, the concept has just hit me. It's an amazing
thing. It's astonishing. It's just like golf.
No, and then I watch a golf game and I'm so confused.
That's how I play golf. I win every time we play golf.
Same. See, you beat me to the line.
Yeah, there you go.
You threw me the hook for the punchline and
sorry.
I took it.
Sorry.
Don't do that.
I beg your pardon. Let me play the lion too. All right, before we get back to the phones, you know, the current buzz around the inner tubes is that we should be seeing some kind of update to the hugely popular MacBook Pro line of laptops sometime in June. Yeah, it's another week. It's another Apple upgrade rumor. The Apple Worldwide Developers Conference starts June 11th. That's an obvious marker. But the website MacRumors.com is putting its money on June 5th based on some information found on a French Mac enthusiast website and the timing of Apple's back-to-school promotional program, which starts next week. So we're not entirely sure what that's about. There was an email from Apple to its distributors with the subject line setup info for new SKUs, which are called stock keeping units. That's the number they put on devices and anything that they get. So there's a stock number. It's a stock number. So we don't know what that's about, but we also know that Apple's new outlet store on its website is offering discounts on what they're calling clearance items.
And most of there's another website somewhere I forget it the name where they list how old each of the machine is and how due it is for an upgrade.
Yeah.
And the MacBooks, the consumer models, were upgraded a couple of weeks ago, and so the MacBook Pros, it would make sense that they'd have an upgrade coming out soon too. But we never know. We're the last ones to find out. It's, you know, Apple announces right. it in the morning, and that's when we find out too.
Right, exactly. The smart money right now is an update to Intel Santa Rosa platform. That's the motherboard configuration.
Well, that's one thing they didn't do with the MacBook. Everyone was expecting that right. on the consumer MacBook, and it didn't happen.
And they're talking about LED backlit displays for the 15 and 17-inch MacBook Pros. And, of course, you always get the rumor of the new ultra-portable laptop or tablet, but those are long shots, I think.
Well, the third-party company that makes the Mac tablet did announce they're going to start using the new models of the Mac rather than the ones they originally were going to use at the time they announced the product. So Apple has updated the market that they're going to use to begin with. So,
yeah, right.
So you can get a Mac tablet. They're hoping to start shipping in July.
Right, right. All right, our next caller is Mark from South Byron, New York. How are things in South Byron, Mark?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Peachy, thanks. What's up?
Good. I have an older Windows 98 machine that I wanted to upgrade to 2K to support Canon's image editing software.
Yep.
And so I've done some things to it. I threw a USB 2 card in it. That was a little bulky at first, but it seems that settled in and it's working fine. And I had cut up the hard drive. I had three partitions on it from some time ago. And I wanted to increase the size of the C partition to allow the 2K upgrade. So using partition magic, I gave it about a 5 gig increase on the C drive. And then I went ahead and defragged it. And then I went ahead and threw 512 megs of RAM in it. Or I should say I had 128 and went to 512. And I'm having some problems now. I'm getting some blue screens. I'm getting browser runtime errors. And
are you still on Windows 98?
Yeah, I'm on 98, second edition, yeah.
Yeah, that's a large part of it right there, since Windows 98 can't use 512 meg of RAM. It really doesn't do well with USB in general. So those two things right there would cause a certain amount of instability.
And the browser's probably so old, that's why you're getting browser errors.
Right, because it's trying to go to sites that it can't get to.
Well, Firefox may work. Does it still work under 98?
I don't even know. I don't even know, honestly.
Yeah, I run Firefox alternately as well.
Yeah.
And I only get the runtime errors under IE.
Yeah, see, the problem you're running into is, since it is such an old computer, you probably...
You need to turn your radio off in the background, because it's...
Oh, I don't have one. Maybe you're getting me on the Bluetooth, getting some feedback.
Oh, all right, I see what you're saying. All right, go ahead.
But yeah, the problem you're running into is, since it is such an old computer, probably looking at, you want to probably upgrade that computer.
Yeah, so going to Windows 2000 is one step, but that had its own batch of problems.
And, of course, that's totally unsupported. Finding good sets of drivers for various devices is going to be hard. I really don't know what to tell you about that. I don't know what's the speed of that computer or anything else, but... Really, if it's that old, it may be time to move to something new.
Yeah, I'm thinking that too. You know, the errors only started after repartitioning the drive and defragging it. And I'm tempted to try to clean up the registry. I did do one of those free registry scans, and it detected a number of errors. But you know, in order to fix them, you have to buy the license for the tool and so on.
Yeah, even so, I got to tell you, I don't know how much longer that thing has to live.
Yeah.
All right, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dan Deary, Steve Ray, Pat Kay, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
I'm Ann Jablonski.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Pat Kay.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Real quick before we get back to the phones, if you use Firefox or Thunderbird or SeaMonkey, you need to update. There are multiple flaws that have been fixed. They could result in system hijacking. The bugs, which are deemed critical, include multiple vulnerabilities in Mozilla's layout engine and in its JavaScript engine that can result in memory corruption and lead to system takeover or denial of service. Upgrading is real easy. You can do it right from the menus, or you can do it from the website. So you really need to do that immediately for Firefox, Thunderbird, or SeaMonkey?
And what's Firefox at now? 2.0.02,
I think.
0.4, I think.
Oh, right? 0.4?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just realizing I have an old version on here. I have to do it myself. This is I did it at home. I forgot to do it on this laptop.
And I think 1.5 went to 0.15 or something weird like that.
Yeah, something way up there somewhere.
Although 1.5 is being discontinued this month, wasn't it, June?
Right, so you need to go to 2.0.0.4, according to Dan, who's clearly watching the site there, so he would know. All right, our next caller is Deb from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Deb. What's your question?
Good morning, guys. I have a desktop that has Linux, Zandros,
sure,
on it, and I want to add Windows XP, partly because I have a new monitor and the drivers, et cetera, et cetera. I spent a good portion of yesterday tearing my hair out trying to get it to boot from the CD, and I know, you know, it says push Shift-Tab, but it only gave me an option of RPX and P something. Is there a secret to that I'm missing?
Well, generally speaking, that's set up in the BIOS. The setup program, when you first boot the machine, it'll say something like press F2 to enter setup.
Right, I did that, and I went into the BIOS.
And in the BIOS, one of the choices should be for your boot devices.
Right.
And
I changed that to boot from CD, but it apparently isn't.
Do you have a wireless keyboard?
No.
No? Okay.
Yeah, sometimes that doesn't work because the computer's not booted enough to recognize the keyboard.
Right. Well, I know, you know, if it gets to the Zandros start screen, I've gone too far. So.
Right. Now, so, you're trying to start this out by actually putting the CD in.
Right.
And then you see, this is hard in a laptop. You need to put the CD in before you shut it down.
It's not a laptop, it's a desktop.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said it was a desktop.
No, it's a desktop.
All right, so you put the CD in.
Uh-huh.
Then you reboot.
Right.
And it doesn't pick up the CD.
There's a point where it comes on where it says push shift tab to, and then it gives you like only two options. One is a push R and push P, and they don't go to where I need to go to boot from the CD. So, and I did download.
It should boot from the CD before you ever see that command.
Right.
If you set your BIOS up right.
Okay, well, what am I missing in the BIOS? I mean, I went through, like, at least three times, I think, and...
Well, generally, you set your boot order, and you tell it to boot the CD first, the hard drive second.
Okay. All right.
What kind of Windows disk is this?
It's a, it's a XP, it has the COA.
Is it a retail disk, an OEM disk, an upgrade disk?
It's an OEM disk, but, yeah, no EM disk.
That should be bootable.
It should
some
be.
Some of them aren't. You have to boot into Windows first and then run the XP.
Right. Some of them have that. Have you tried this disk on another machine?
No, because my laptop has Windows XP Home on it.
Well, you can still boot it up, and then when it says, what do you want to do, just shut it down and move on just to see that it boots.
Okay, yeah.
Because my first thought is there's something wrong with the CD.
That occurred to me.
Either the CD itself or the drive.
The drive does, you know, go on.
Well, but it doesn't necessarily mean it can read that particular CD.
Right.
So I would test that. My first place to start would be to test that CD in another machine. Obviously, don't go through the install process.
Right.
But at least see that it boots up and gets started. If it doesn't do that, then you've got a bad CD. If it does, then when was the last time you played around with that CD drive in your Zandros machine?
Oh, a while ago.
So not too recently.
Right. Yeah,
try booting something.
I've been using my laptop almost exclusively, and I'm just upgrading that now. Zandros was put down about a year ago.
Right. What you want to do next, then, is to boot up something else, your Zandros CD or anything, in that desktop and see if it boots.
Okay, what about Ubuntu? Is that something that would be...
I love Ubuntu. I think it's the best distro out there.
You can boot from that, too. That would be another...
Yeah.
Well, actually, I just burned that CD, downloaded and burned that CD from my laptop last night. So.
Yeah, so you can boot from that as well.
Mm-hmm.
My suggestion is, if you're going to put... Are you looking to dual boot this machine?
Yes.
Then my suggestion is you put on Windows first.
Well, Windows is already on there.
on the desktop? Oh, all right, I see.
It's had nothing but Linux on it for a year, and it has a very small hard drive in the machine, and it has a portable 40 gig and I'm trying to get it on, you know, the Windows onto the portable 40 gig, which, you know, USB, plugs into USB.
If your system is old enough, it may
be really slow.
Right. It also may not, support booting from USB, does it?
That would also be in your BIOS boot order. The USB hard or USB device would be listed as a choice.
Okay.
And right. That would be extremely, extremely slow booting that up every time. And even loading it, it's going to take a very long time to set it up.
Alrighty. So this is probably not a real good idea, huh?
A second hard drive in the computer would be better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay,
That would be better.
So I need to go into the BIOS, set it to boot from CD, try Ubuntu and see if that boots.
Try that disk on another computer and see if it boots.
Right, right. All right, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Thank you. Thank you very much. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dan Deary, Steve Ray, Pat Kay, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 50 minutes after the hour. We are listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. All right, we don't actually have time for Uncle Dave's Story Hour, and also we don't have Uncle Dave, but I will tell you an experience that I just had yesterday. My machine, I screwed something up. I play with it all the time, and I needed to reload Linux. And I was actually afraid to do this because it's my day-to-day machine, and I really didn't want to damage anything. So what I ended up doing, I use Ubuntu, and I just ran the installer over the thing, and I told it, put in a new operating system, but leave my home directory alone. When I rebooted, everything came up. It was perfect. Everything was there that I wanted to be there. Everything ran. I installed all of the codecs to do all the audio and video and everything else so I can do YouTube and Flash and all the other things that I want to do. I was very impressed by that. I was awfully nervous because I didn't want to lose my system.
Yep.
You know, but as long as I didn't format the home directory, which is where it keeps all the important things for me, it worked perfectly because unlike under Windows where everything is on the same drive, even if you're on the same drive, you put the home directory in a different partition. So you don't have to format that partition. So when I reinstalled, I lost nothing.
Yeah. And that's even a good thing for XP users to do. You know, like every year, every other year or so, you know, if just to clear things up, just back up everything. Start out fresh and then reload your backups.
Well, they should be backing up anyway, right?
Of course.
That should be what they're doing anyway. Right. All right, we're going to take another quick break. The mighty Glenn Lamberts is in to give us the news, the views, the stuff you can use. We'll be back on the other side of that. We have a bunch of people who have been patiently waiting to get their questions answered. We've got the poll and all the other good stuff. So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dan Deary, Steve Ray, Pat Kay, me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 Watt 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Pat Kay.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. You know, every week we do a poll. Last week's poll was about what operating system you would rather have help you run your car. We had a story about a company that was prototyping a system that would slow cars down and warn you if you were going off the road and all this other stuff. And it was running Linux, and so that was the question. What operating system would you rather help running your car? 276 of you voted, making it number 205 on the all-time hit list, thanks to each and every one of you. Number one choice, 41% of you said, I don't need no stinking help. 37% said Linux, 14% said Mac OS, 7% said Windows, and 7 of you said the Amiga Workbench. This week's choice is real simple. Comes from an interesting story in the news this week. Security researchers found a remote vulnerability in the upgrade mechanism in the Firefox extension used by Google Toolbar and Google Browser Sync. It could lead to attacks and covert installation of malicious software. Basically, an attacker can silently slip malicious software onto computers via an upgrade mechanism flaw in the latest versions of highly popular Firefox extensions, including Google Toolbar, Google Browser Sync, Yahoo Toolbar, Delicious Extension, Facebook Toolbar, AOL Toolbar, Ask.com Toolbar, LinkedIn Browser Toolbar, Netcraft Anti-Phishing Toolbar, and Fish Tank Site Checker.
Pretty much anything that goes to the internet.
Yeah, pretty much. So, again, that's part of that update that we talked about a minute ago. But the question is, and I really couldn't put all of those into the question, so I just used Google Toolbar. I said, do you use the Google Toolbar for Firefox? The choices are yes, no, and Google who for fire what now? So far, we've had 87 votes, and the overwhelming majority of you have said no, which is good. Now, I know you people love to take the poll, but when you're done with the poll, I know that you feel frustrated that you haven't had enough to say, that you haven't had enough to do. So underneath that, you will find a yellow box. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it takes you to my website, AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com, which will then let you go to the opinion side and put in an opinion. While you're there, check it out. I have a forum, a newsletter that I do with tips and tricks and tools and stuff and websites and cool things. And it's a pretty neat little device, if I do say so myself. So that's our poll of the week. Please participate in that with us. We're going back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Greece, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
I have a question on the Stinger. When you go to the Stinger page, there it says Stinger downloads, and there's the Stinger version 3.4.9, and then there's like all these other ones.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like W32 polyp, W32 back away, W32 QQ passworm, and all that kind of stuff. Do you need to run all those, or does the top one kind of satisfy the need to run Stinger?
Well, the top one is all you need to run the Security Tango. That's really all that's needed there.
Yeah, those other ones are just for if you know that your computer is infected with, say, like the W32 polyp. Then you download that one, run that, and that should clear up your system from that virus.
How would you know that?
Your antivirus should tell you.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Antiviruses can't always clear up some of those because they target antiviruses.
Right.
They hide from antiviruses. That's the whole point behind Stinger.
Yeah, the purpose of Stinger was to catch viruses that intentionally target your antivirus. And that was one of the questions we had for so long, is that Stinger hadn't been updated in almost
right.
a year.
Yeah.
Right.
And then so, you know, we were sort of saying, well, you don't need to run it anymore because there haven't been any new specific viruses. Well, now there is. And so they updated it last month.
Yeah, I have to put it back into the Tango. I haven't done that in a while.
So I run AVG, so AVG would tell me if one of these other ones is present, and then I run one of the others.
Right.
And the main Stinger does look for a lot of those other downloads, like the W32 polyp. It looks for that, but if the main Stinger can't get rid of it, then you want to download the other one.
Alrighty.
Yep.
Thanks very much.
And you're sort of at a good site there by using AVG, because most of the virus writers are targeting Symantec and McAfee because they know those are the two most popular antiviruses. Was it a couple, 3 weeks ago we had a story about that 80% of new viruses get by Symantec and McAfee?
Most of the virus writers don't even release them until they can get past those two.
So running a smaller one like AVG or Avast is almost better these days.
All right, we're going to go back to the wait, are we done? Are we done with that? I'm using the wrong mouse. I'm a mess today. Is Bob done? Did he leave? All right. Our next caller is Tom. Tom, where are you calling from?
From Pennfield.
Okay, what's your question?
I've got a Windows XP system, and everything's up to date on it, but I keep getting security update, yellow shield at the bottom of the taskbar. and it's for security update. It's called KB923723, and it's a step-by-step interactive training update from Windows. Are you there?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I've run this maybe 10 or 12 times. In fact, just today I downloaded it right from the Windows site, the .exe file, and ran it and then rebooted the computer. And the thing never comes through. I'm always getting the yellow shield say update for this. And every time I run it, I get the yellow shield again saying to run it over again. So there's something preventing this thing from actually executing.
Are you running 64-bit Windows?
No. It's an old system. It's probably a five-year-old system.
They do have an x86 version of it, which you may want to try downloading. Make sure that you're downloading and installing that one, because if you are downloading the 64-bit version, it will not install on your system.
Yeah, one of the tricks is to go to Microsoft's download site, download that one directly, instead of letting Software Update
do it.
That's
what I just did. I just did that a while ago. And I got the .exe file, and I executed it, and it ran it. Then I rebooted the computer, and it still came back again and says this update's waiting for you. To update.
Well, you could always say ignore this update and don't tell me again. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't fix the underlying problem.
Well, it sounds like it says that security issues been identified, step-by-step interactive training application that could allow an attacker to compromise your Windows-based system and gain control over it. So it sounds like it's at least medium serious. So I'd like to have the update go through. I think this came out about a month ago. A date published on the Microsoft site says 5/8/2007.
Well, is the install not working, or does it just it needs to be installed again?
It actually, when I do it from the update shield, it'll come back and say it's completed.
So it may be that the update is being installed, but Windows is forgetting that and telling you it needs to be installed again.
One way you can check that too, if you open up Add and Remove Programs in the control panel.
Mm-hmm.
Click the little button that says Show Updates, and this will list all of your Windows XP updates here, and you can double-check to make sure that that security update is installed.
And if it is installed, then it's okay to check Don't Tell Me About This One Again.
Okay, can I do that one specifically, just that one? Or
yes.
Yeah, by that knowledge base number. It'll be listed in Add Remove.
All right, I'm looking for that now. If it comes up,
All right, we don't really have time to wait for you to do
that,
but that's basically what you have to do. If it's installed there, then you can go into the update system there and tell and just check the box that says, don't bother me about this one anymore.
All right.
That's your best bet.
All right, that sounds good. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom.
Yep.
Our next caller is Fred. Fred, where are you calling from?
I'm Penfield as well.
Ah, well, a lot of Penfield problems today. Good, how are you?
I have a laptop that yesterday, inadvertently, the power went down on me, and I can't get it to turn on. And I noticed after a couple of attempts to get it to power up with the power button that the charging power pack was unplugged from the wall. So I plugged it back in, but it's not charging it up enough so that I can turn it on.
How long did you wait?
A reset button on the back, and it says to stick a piece of...
But before you do that, a laptop is generally designed that if a certain amount, it won't turn on unless there's a certain amount of charge in the battery.
Right.
So your best bet is to plug it in and wait about 2 hours.
Right, I had it plugged in overnight, and it still didn't help, and I went to turn it on this morning, nothing on the power button.
But it charged.
I can't say that. When it's charging, normally there's a little orange light that comes on the
right
on the bottom of it, showing that it's charging, but that light never came on, just the regular light that shows it looks supposed to be fully charged.
Right. All right, the first thing to do is to check all four connections for the power. Three. The one that goes into the wall, the one that plugs into that brick on the floor,
right,
and the one that plugs into the back of the laptop.
Right, I unplug those, all of them, and plug them back in again.
The brick that you keep on the floor or wherever.
Right. Actually, that's where the cord came out. The cord came out of the little power pack that lays on the floor. The one that goes into the wall and then goes into that, that's the one that was unplugged. It was unplugged from the power pack.
Okay.
So I plugged it back in. I mean, I've kicked that off before and then plugged it back on and then had no problems.
Okay, does another thing is
I can't turn it on now. It will not turn on at all. The
all right, let's let Dan talk.
What I was going to say was some of those have a light on them. So when you plug it in the wall,
right,
you know
the light is on. Yes.
Okay.
The light is on the little power, the little square box.
Okay. There's a couple of things that could be the problem then. One is if you've kicked that cord out a number of times, it could be loose or broken, and therefore you're getting no power from the brick to the laptop. The other choice is that there is something wrong with the actual batteries themselves. How old is this laptop?
It's about 4 years old.
That could be about.
Maybe. Here's my suggestion. Take it into somebody and have them check that.
I very rarely run the computer on battery. So I've always running it
and
on
that's
power.
A problem.
That's bad. Every month or so, you should run the battery completely down and then charge it back up again
right.
to keep the battery
because
fresh.
Because if it's always plugged in, then the system thinks that's its normal state and doesn't charge the battery anymore. So take it to somebody and have them check it. First thing, tell them the story, and the first thing they should check is that power cord.
Yeah, try it with a different computer. Try a different battery in that computer.
Right, and they can do all that because they have all that stuff around.
So don't fool with the reset button on the under. There's a thing, there's a little hole on the back of it that says it'll wake the machine up by sticking a...
Can't hurt to try it, but...
But I didn't know what the order and it was to do that. It's a gateway machine. I actually got a gateway person on the phone last night, even though I don't have paid tech support with them anymore.
Right, and they said
I was able to get through, but they told me to unplug the power first before I press the reset button.
Yeah, the problem with that is if the battery is dead, it won't work. But it can't hurt to try it.
Sometimes we've seen unplug the power, take the battery out, let it sit overnight.
Oh, you already did that.
And do a deep reset. We sometimes see that working again, too.
What do you mean, deep reset?
Unplug the power, take the battery out, and let it sit overnight.
Just let it sit out on the table or something?
Yeah.
The battery itself?
Yep.
Right, so just unplug everything. You remove all power from the computer, and then any residual charge left in it or any trickle charge left in it is removed.
And then you plug it in and let it recharge again.
In the morning, yeah.
Again for another couple hours before you try turning it on.
Yep.
But beyond that, at that point, you're just going to have to take it to somebody and let them try different batteries and different cables and everything else to just see where the problem lies. And that's the advantage of a company which has that capability. We have to take a break back in just a couple of minutes with Dan Deary, Steve Ray, Pat Kay, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Let's go.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Pat Kay.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Our next caller is Caroline from Greece. Welcome, Caroline. Is it Caroline or Carolyn?
Carolyn.
Carolyn, welcome. Welcome. What can we do for you?
Thank you. I'm using Ubuntu Linux.
Sure.
And several websites, for example, CNN, have video clips that want you to have Windows Media Player. So how can I view those videos when I'm using Linux?
Ah, actually, fairly easily.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for calling. Bye-bye. Oh, you want more?
Okay.
She did ask how.
She
did ask how, not if
oh, she
could
did,
or not.
Right, she did ask how. All right.
Can I view
right.
those? Yes, thank
yeah,
you.
How.
Can I? Yes. How would be another question. Call back. It's not terribly difficult. What version of Ubuntu are you using?
Dapper Drake.
That's the 6. One before 6. Feisty. All right.
Yes.
It's easily doable. You want to go to a website, and let me make sure I got the right one. Yeah, automatix.com.
Okay.
AUTOMATIX.com.
Okay.
And it's actually www. You can't, this is one of those sites where you have to put in the, oh, look, it's not there. The site is not available. Maybe that's the wrong place. Hold on.
So I'll call back, right?
Call back.
Well, I found one called howtogeek.com.
Yes.
Use the VLC player to play Windows Media.
Okay, I've installed that, but when I click on
it. Oh, it's getautomatix.com.
Yeah, okay.
All right, here's the deal. You go to getautomatix.com.
Okay.
And click the installation button.
Okay.
And you will have multiple choices. Feisty, edgy, dapper, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And your choices are also i386, which is probably what you have.
Yes, I do.
Or AMD64. You simply click on that. and it will say, do you want to install this new thing? And then you install it. You'll have a new menu choice called, under System Tools, called Automatics.
Okay.
And if you run that, you will be allowed to install an amazing amount of stuff you don't have right now. And it installs directly as Ubuntu. It works great. Not a problem. I wouldn't worry about anything in terms of that.
Okay.
So that's the easiest and probably safest way to get all of the features that you want under Linux. There are some commercial programs you can download. Of course, those are not free. You will have to pay for those before. Mm-hmm. You get a 30-day demo of those.
Sure.
And that's how they pay for this free service. They, offer those demos. But the reality is that there's a whole bunch of free stuff that you can download, and the most important one is the codecs.
Okay, great.
There you go.
Okay. What's the process for reinstalling Ubuntu without affecting your home directory?
If you installed Ubuntu, if you let Ubuntu install itself, there's two things that happen. One is everything is in one partition,
mm-hmm.
or the home partition is on its own separate partition.
Oh, okay.
If it's on its own separate partition, then you can reinstall the home directory is called /home.
Right.
The system directory is just called /.
X, yep.
You reinstall the system, tell it, I want this partition to be /, the original /.
Oh, okay.
I want this partition to be home, the original home.
Oh, okay.
And then you uncheck format the home directory.
Oh, okay.
And then it makes it home, but it doesn't format it, which means you don't lose what's there. And so if you use the same, if you install with the same username, everything comes back just fine.
Okay, great.
There you go.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. That made it real easy for me. I got to be honest. It was great. Our next caller is Ron from Ontario. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Good afternoon.
Hi there.
How's it going today?
Peachy, how are you?
Doing great. Having fun with Thunderbird.
Yeah.
Originally was missing a DLL file about a few days ago, and I said, well, let me just upgrade to the latest, greatest. And I did that, and Thunderbird comes up. But now it looks like it's having some kind of a font problem. Maybe that's a bad description. With everything in the screen to the right that lists all the emails that have come in.
Sure.
Until I start up Word. If I start up Microsoft Word, then all that font problem goes away. And if I close Word, it comes back.
Hmm. What it sounds like is Word is...
Word is loading its own fonts that are overriding something else?
Yeah.
I can just have Word in the background.
Right. But still, it's either loading or making accessible a font that Thunderbird wants and that you don't have available to you at the moment.
Okay.
You can change the fonts that Thunderbird uses.
Okay.
And that's somewhere in the... I'm just waiting to get cancel. I'm just waiting to get this up. All right, here we go. So if you go into Preferences, one of the choices is Display, and one of the tabs under Display is Fonts.
Right.
So if you click the Fonts button on the Fonts tab in the Display section, you can change what fonts are used. And what it sounds like is you're using a font that isn't normal in some way.
Okay, because I've got it using, Western that's coming in normally and going out normally.
Right, that's Western, but right. Underneath that you have a proportional font, a serif font, a sans serif font, a monospace font, and you get to pick which those are. You also get to change the sizes of those fonts, minimum font sizes and other things like that, and your display resolution. So my suggestion is to pick one of the generics, like for proportional and serif, pick serif or Times Roman, right? So if that may help, I don't know.
That's what I've got selected.
All right.
Monospace Courier New.
You got the installation disks for Microsoft Office and Word?
Not with me.
Okay, because you might want to try uninstalling Microsoft Office and reinstalling it.
Because Office loads a whole bunch of its own fonts.
Yeah.
Well, one of the problems is that Office loads a whole bunch of its own fonts that can overwrite fonts that other programs wanted. And it might be a slightly different version of something.
Right. My suggestion still is pick a different font and see what happens. You know, see if that fixes the problem. Then you at least know where the problem lies. This may be, and call us back and let us know, because this is going to be a longer solution.
So instead of Western, pick something.
Well, Western is fine. That's okay. That's the font family. That's you're a Western reader. You're not an Eastern or Arabic it's Western. So, but it's the fonts under that you want to change.
Yeah, like Times New Roman or something like that.
Right, or you know, pick something else.
Okay.
And at Georgia or Genalt or whatever you've got available, and see if that fixes the problem, and then let us know.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Ron.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is clearly not one of those instant answer problems.
Corrupted font cache, possibly. Where does Windows keep the font cache?
In heap. Along with everything else. Why did you ask? You knew that. Yeah. Our next caller is Trisha from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Trisha. What's your question?
Yes, my question is, my son's laptop computer got wet, and unfortunately he turned it on before he realized it had gotten wet. It's a Gateway laptop tablet computer, and it's a model 275, if that helps. But we're wondering if there's anything we can do, or what should we do?
Did the blue smoke come out?
He's not at home, so we're trying to help him, you know, from a distance.
Right.
He didn't say anything about any smoke, but he turned it on and it didn't work. And we advised him to try to dry it out, and not turn it on again.
Turn it off, pull the battery out, leave it upside down for a week, see if it will dry out.
Okay.
The problem is you don't want to use anything to help it dry out, like a hair dryer or whatever. That can just melt the keys.
Was it water or was it something else?
Water from a window. It rained and he didn't, you know, it was supposed to rain.
That's not as bad. We see a lot of problems with soda or coffee, and the sugar residue gets left behind and screws it up.
Yeah, our suggestion at this point is to let it dry out thoroughly, and then we're talking about days.
Okay.
And see if that helps. But beyond that.
Don't tell tech support it got wet when you call up and say it's not working.
Yeah, it's not working and you don't know why.
Accidental abuse is not covered under warranty.
Right, okay.
There are electronics washes you can get. I know here in town, Goldcrest carries it. It's kind of expensive, but we use it a lot for cleaning spills in computers. But we take them completely apart, you know, down to pull the logic board out and clean them off. And the danger is that something shorted when the power got turned on. And if that happens, then it's not going to work again without replacing that part.
Right.
But if it just needs to dry off, and something didn't actually short and melt, then it may start again.
Okay. So you said to turn it upside down. Did you say that?
Well, it depends on where the water came in. A lot of people spill water through the keyboard. You turn it upside down and let the water kind of ooze out.
Probably a good idea to leave it open too. So. You know, the air's...
Yeah.
You want to evaporate all the water out completely.
If there's anything in it you can take out, you know, if the hard drive comes out or the battery comes out, if the keyboard comes off easily, as much as you can do to take it apart
let it all hit the air
access.
And dry.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And you said maybe even up to a week, let it dry out.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll give that a try. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Our next caller is what?
I say that's always sad when that happens.
Oh, man.
We had a rash a couple of months ago. We had like three or four machines came in a week with wine spills. The cat
must have been a heck of a party.
Yeah, I know. Cat knocked over the wine glass and
yep.
See, that's why I only use sodas with screw tops I can screw back on.
Yes, exactly. All right, our next caller is Joe from Buffalo. Hey, Joe, what do you know?
Howdy. For that caller that had the update that wouldn't stick, would you maybe recommend going into the add remove and uninstalling it and then reinstalling it maybe?
Well, if it's already installed, then there isn't really a reason to do that. It would be just better off to tell it not to download that update again.
It may not hurt.
It certainly couldn't hurt. You're absolutely right. It could not hurt. But the reality is that what it sounds like is just another Microsoft goof up.
Yeah,
something
I know.
Corrupted in the registry.
I've had so many of those updates that, yeah, I know it's there, and it's like, okay, but I want to do it again and again and again.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But what I called about was I was thinking about getting a new computer in the near future.
Yep.
And there's just a wealth of options out there for even just the processor. I mean, you got Core Duo and
right.
The Opteron and Sempron and Athlon. It's like, could you
it's
go over
Ford, Chevy, Dodge, Buick. You know, they all do the same thing. Some of them do it a little different, yeah.
Right. Here's the reality. You want as much bang as you can get for your buck because you're going to keep this machine for a few years. Dual core is certainly better than single core. If you're using Windows and you're not using any of the professional versions like Vista Professional or Business, then don't even bother with quad core.
Yeah, quad would be a little expensive. Yeah, no, none of that Microsoft stuff for me. I'm a Fedora core kind of person.
There you go. Dual core will do you just fine. Either AMD or Intel, whatever you have a personal preference for, they both work well. Intel seems to have the lead right now.
Mm. Well, it seems I want to get into that virtual machine thing. I was reading a web article recently that AMD tends to do that a little better.
Yes.
Their new Pacifica technology.
Right. If you get the new Pacifica chips, you'll be able to do virtual systems a little better.
Although, there's a big caveat. We ran into that in the Mac world where Parallels and running virtual machines on the Mac is common. It is against the license for Windows Home and Windows Home Basic and Windows Home Premium to run it under a virtualization.
Yes, but he's using Fedora.
If you're using Fedora virtualization to run Windows, that's still a violation of the Windows Vista license.
Right.
It cannot be run under virtualization. It works just fine. It's just against their license.
Right.
Yeah, isn't that something? All the more reason to get away from Microsoft as much as possible.
Right, exactly.
Their response to this was that, you know, people running virtualization are a higher class of users, and you probably want to run the Windows Vista Business package, which is licensed for virtualization.
Right. But what's nice about virtualization is you can run multiple distributions of Linux at once, and you can run the virtual machines, let you dedicate a machine to a specific task and not have to worry about conflicts with other things, and it's a pretty neat deal. But you're right, AMD is a little hotter for that. Get all the RAM you can afford.
Mm.
If you're doing virtualization, you don't have enough RAM.
Gee, even a better thing. Gee, I think I'd like to try out this. Oh, that just totally hosed my system. Gee, I guess I'll just copy it from my backup of the virtual disk image.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's really a very we do that all the time. Most of our test machines at work are virtual machines. So that as we're screwing things, as we're playing around with things and trying new stuff, we can very easily fix any problems we have. But yeah, it sounds like you know what you're doing. I'd say go for it. It really just is a matter of buying the most you can afford. Get a good video card and all of that stuff, and you're on your way. We got to take
help, guys.
Thank you.
Well, actually, since he is using Linux, he's got to be a little extra careful about drivers for especially the hottest, latest, newest.
Well, both
stuff.
NVIDIA and ATI are available, so that's nice. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dan Deary, Steve Ray, Pat Kay, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Pat Kay.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. I wish the webcams were working. You should see Pat. He's got this wrist flip thing where he throws it back to you when he says, okay, now you can talk, and he's got this. It's very elegant. I'm very impressed by it. It always makes me feel like I'm an actual radio guy when I see that. It's very nicely done.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
It's all in the wrist. All right, we're going to go right back to the phones. Maggie is probably still on her way to Buffalo. What's your question, Maggie?
Hi. I have Outlook Express, and when I delete my mail, of course, it goes into the deleted file. However, all of a sudden, a few months back, my opened deleted mail disappeared. It's not in the deleted file. Do you know where it is?
There is a view preference to show only unread mail. So as soon as you read something, it won't display it anymore. And I think it's in the view menu somewhere.
Oh, okay. And it says what again? I'm sorry.
Show only unread mail or view display only unread mail.
Okay. All right. I'll try that.
So you want to change that to display all mail.
Okay. Thanks so much. That was easy.
Yeah, it was. Now, you should be deleting your mail every once in a while.
I do.
Because keeping too much mail in any one folder eventually will confuse Outlook Express. Now, it's thousands and thousands of messages, but even so, you should be careful, particularly with deleted mail.
So I should just empty that folder
fairly regularly. What I find is a lot of people actually use deleted mail as a kind of a hold pen.
Yeah,
and that's a bad idea. Create a holding folder.
Almost delete. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably unimportant or delete later or something.
And there's also auto-delete scripts in Outlook Express, aren't there? Delete when you quit?
Well, I know there are in Exchange.
You can have it empty the trash bin every time.
Yeah, that empties it completely. I know in some of the other mail programs you can say empty deleted mail or delete deleted mail more than 60 days old.
Yeah, you can do that too.
Right. Okay. So that may be what happened to your mail, Maggie. It may be that it's set up to say, you know, after 30 days or after 60 days, dump deleted mail older than 30 days.
Well, the view option is in the view menu under current view. There's a hide read messages or a show read messages option.
That's read read.
Right, yes. Right. Okay, I will look. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that auto-delete thing is why you don't want to use trash as a kind of filer.
Exactly.
Well, that's a classic story. What is it? Computer Stupidities website I found. Someone calling up and they needed to get software installed. So the tech guy came down at lunchtime to install the software. There wasn't enough space on the hard drive, to put in the Domino 5 update or something like that. And so the guy emptied the trash and loaded the software, no problem. After lunch, he gets this irate call from the customer. Where's all my files? What files? The ones I was keeping in the trash.
Yep. Yep.
Don't keep anything in the trash. You don't want trash.
That's exactly right. Our next caller is Frank from Greece, New York. Welcome, Frank. What's your question?
Hey, how are you?
Good.
My bookmarks keep disappearing with Firefox.
All of them or some of them?
Some of them. Like, get down to the ones I got listed, alphabetically by S, and everything after that is, gone.
How many do you have?
Oh, probably less than 200.
I think there's a limit of, 128 menu items?
Oh, no, it's not that many. You mean, the folders in the bookmarks?
Right, you have a limit, and I don't remember what the number is, to the number of things you can have right under bookmarks.
Okay.
But if those are folders, then you have an unlimited number of items in each folder.
Yeah, I got probably 20 folders.
Okay, and it's stuff in those folders?
The folders themselves are missing.
No, you aren't getting the little arrow at the bottom, because sometimes when you load up tons of bookmarks, you'll get a little arrow, and you can press it and then just see everything. That's not showing up?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
And I've had this problem in the past, so I was kind of just saving exporting the bookmarks to save, and so I, if I reload that from a prior date, they all come up.
Okay. And you got the latest version of Firefox installed?
Is it the 2.004 or something like that? Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
It theoretically could be a corrupt bookmark file.
Okay.
If you go to under Windows, Documents and Setting, your username, application data, Mozilla Firefox profiles. And I'll post this link. You can delete, export your bookmarks. Delete that bookmark file.
Mm-hmm.
Then launch Firefox. It will make a new empty bookmark file.
Okay.
And then import your bookmarks back. So maybe the bookmark file is corrupted and losing itself, and you keep re-importing into a corrupt file.
Okay.
And just a little shortcut for that, too. You can just click on Start, Run, type in percent, app data, percent. We could post that up too, and that will bring you right to that.
Okay. I have something real fast. Can I reinstall my Windows XP on another computer?
Not legally. If it's already on one machine, you cannot put it on another machine.
Okay, so even if I'm just putting a new motherboard in mine, I can't do it.
Well, that's different.
Well, that's different, and there's more problems because Windows will think you're installing it on a second computer and may not activate. And then you have to call Microsoft and say that you're upgrading your computer and hope that they'll let you reactivate it on what's technically a new computer.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
No problem.
All right, thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dan Deary, Steve Ray, Pat Kay, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 50 minutes after the hour on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dan Deary.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Pat Kay.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Our next caller is Lance from Penfield, New York. Welcome, Lance. What's your question?
What happened to unsent messages file? The new version of Thunderbird doesn't show it.
Yeah, the new version.
I saved a message to send later. Now I don't know where it is.
It's probably in drafts.
No.
Messages that you haven't sent yet.
No, you have to save something as a draft.
Yeah.
When you create a message and you decide you don't want to start it now, you don't want to send it now, you save it and that puts it in draft. But
well,
if you don't save it, if you just close it, it's gone. There's no automatic unsent thing.
Well, it used to have. And the older version had, and in fact, it asked me whether I wanted to send it later, and so I said yes, but then I couldn't find it.
Yeah, actually, the new version of Thunderbird, that doesn't set up a folder until you start using it. Like, when you first install it, it's only got the inbox there, and until you actually send a message, then it puts the sent message icon under
your
profile.
Well, sent is one thing. Unsent is what's missing. Unsent messages.
Right. So if you just start a message, and then you don't want to send it, what do you do?
Well, I'll close it, and it asks me if I want to send it later, and I told it yes.
And it's not in draft.
No. I'll have to experiment some more with it.
It might have gone into the outbox and was sent later at the next schedule. Not being put in the don't send it until I tell it to send it. It put it into the outbox waiting to be sent on the next scheduled send.
Where is the outbox?
The outbox is only visible when there's something in it. It will delete. It doesn't show the outbox after it sends all the mail.
Yeah, and if it did send it, it should be under sent now.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to experiment.
Yeah, so if it's in the sent folder, it did get sent. When it asked if it wanted to send it later, it did send it later. It should ask if you want to save it as a draft so you can keep working on it later before it's ever sent at all.
That I do frequently.
Yeah.
A slightly related question is Sam. How do I train Thunderbird? Because it keeps asking me if I want. It tells me it thinks this message is spam, and I say no. But next time I get a message from the same source, it asks me again.
Well, it's not about the source. Here's the way you do it: you create a folder called spam. You save a lot of messages in there. You want at least 100, and really 500 is better. And then you select all of those, and you can teach Thunderbird about spam.
How?
Hold on. I've got the old version loaded here.
The first step is people you want to get mail from, put them in your address book, and then it will never get marked as spam.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try that.
Right. Under tools, there's junk mail controls.
Well, junk is a different folder.
Right, but
junk mail is spam. Spam. Well, no, spam is a tasty meat product from Hormel Foods, and they don't like it used for junk email. So a lot of programs call it junk mail
as opposed to spam. So what you can do is if you open up junk mail controls, there's a tab called adaptive filter. You have to enable that.
Yeah. Oh, adaptive filter.
There you go. And then every time you mark something as spam, Thunderbird starts to learn what it is.
Well, I want to mark it as not spam.
Well, things will be, and the same thing, if something gets marked as spam and you unmark it, it will remember that too. It will learn that. It takes a while to learn, but it does learn, and it's something you got to have a little bit of patience with, but it definitely works.
Okay.
All righty. We're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everybody to whom we did not get. Call earlier and often.
That's in the mark menu for Thunderbird. You can mark a message as junk or not junk.
Right. And we will be back next week. I want to thank Dan Deary and Steve Ray and Pat Kay, who did a great job. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with, I think, the usual crew on Soundbites, 1180 WHAM.